Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case today is United States versus Spano. Mr. Smith.
May it please the court. We have raised two principal issues on appeal. We have challenged the facial constitutionality of Section 666, and we have challenged the statute as applied in this prosecution. Because the U.S. Supreme Court has granted certiorari in United States versus Sabri on the issue of the facial constitutionality of Section 666, we would like to rest on our briefs on that issue. Instead, I'd like to focus the argument on the unconstitutionality of Section 666 as it is applied in this case, an issue not raised in Sabri. Even if Section 666 is facially constitutional, this 666 conviction...
I'm not sure I understand how it could be facially constitutional in light of the Salinas case.
Yes, Your Honor. I am going to address both Salinas case and the Grossi case in this circuit, but if Your Honor permits, I would like to set up a premise for examining those two cases. Thank you. Because the even if Section 666 is facially constitutional, the 666 convictions in this case should be vacated. Is there a limit on federal authority to prosecute criminal conduct on a local level? We know from U.S. versus Lopez and U.S. versus Morrison that even though the Commerce Clause is broadly construed, the Supreme Court has struck down federal criminal statutes as unconstitutional because the statutes did not require the defendant's conduct to impact the interstate commerce, thus upsetting the federal balance to such a degree that it required the statute to be an unconstitutional assertion of the commerce power. The spending power cannot carry any further than the commerce power. How could it be otherwise, especially because Section 666, the first and only federal criminal statute grounded on the commerce spending, grounded on Congress's spending power, rather than one of the subjects expressly assigned to Congress by Article 1, like the commerce power.
Can I just ask you a question on the scope of this case?
Yes.
The indictment here covered only about a 60-day period of at least 3-year investigation. Were there other indictments growing out of this investigation?
No, Your Honor.
Just this.
This is a limited thing. And my client was, Mr. Inandino, was not indicted in any other case. Okay. This was a limited case, Your Honor. That's right.
Have you challenged the proposition that money is fungible?
Yes, I do in this particular case, Your Honor. As is related to the COPS program, which I will outline for you. So to get to the question here is whether the defendant's conduct impacted a federal interest to such a degree that it rendered the prosecution a constitutional assertion of the spending power.
Well, the COPS money was in the same bank account as the money that was appropriated here, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. Well, it was commingled.
Can we say that there's insufficient relationship that Congress couldn't attempt to protect its funds by criminalizing this kind of conduct, which involves the funds that are in the same bank account with federally appropriated funds?
Yes, we can, Your Honor, as a question of as applied in this case, because in the Grossi case, for instance, I'll get into that, Your Honor. In the Grossi case, this court upheld a Section 666 conviction where a Bloom Township supervisor allocated payments to the co-conspirators from the township's general assistance program. The township received at least $10,000 in federal funds. Okay. The funds were commingled, as Your Honor suggests. Although, unlike our case, there is no indication whatsoever that the federal funds were earmarked for a specific purpose. They were in our case, and that makes a difference, Your Honor, as applied here on, in determining whether there's an impact on the federal fund, federal interest. We do know that the township's general assistance program in Grossi was not funded by the federal government. The difference between this case and Grossi is tangible. The reasoning of the court in Grossi rested on the principle that Bloom Township General Program Assistance Program has more to spend on welfare or dangle as a law for bribes if the federal government meets some of the township's other expenses. In this case, we know, and here's the difference, Your Honor, we know for certain that none of the federal monies could have been used to pay for the town of Cicero's expenses outside of the COPS program, including the bribe. The federal COPS program money was not fungible. Under the COPS program, Cicero had to pay the salaries of the new police officers and had to account for every dollar it spent before seeking reimbursement from the federal government.
How do you say it's not fungible if it's in all the same bank accounts?
No.
That's a pretty difficult proposition to defend, it seems to me.
Because, remember, that Grossi was only a question of statutory construction, Your Honor. And this issues were raised there about the constitutional as applied. And we have a difference factually here that we can prove to the penny that none of the monies from the COPS program were used to pay the bribe. This money was stolen from Cicero, and that makes it a local affair. See, in Grossi, there was the general assistance program and $10,000 in federal funds that weren't earmarked for anything. So as a consequence, that money was fungible. But the COPS program is not fungible, and we can prove that not one penny of that COPS program was paid in the bribe or the fraud in this case.
Aren't the cases that hold that that's sort of a nexus that isn't even necessary in a 666 prosecution?
There are such cases, Your Honor, but there are such cases, and four circuits have held that there is necessary to make, in other words, what happened in Grossi is that you don't need a nexus, basically. Statutory construction. And that's why the Supreme Court is considering that whether or not the statute is constitutional. Because if you don't need a nexus, then you would be invading the province of the states and police power, and you would upset the federal balance. That's the issue that is going to be before the Supreme Court. But if the courts save the constitutionality of 666 by somehow building in an element, then there has to be a nexus to save the constitutionality, and that's why I'm saying there's no nexus here. There's no impact upon the federal fund or the federal program and its policies.
Well, fungibility just means, I think, that if the federal funds are earmarked for a certain purpose and are spent for that purpose, you don't need to spend local funds for the same purpose, and they're available to be misappropriated as they were here. Isn't that what you mean by fungibility? Money in one case can take the place of money spent for some other purpose.
I was with Your Honor until the very end. It is what you said, except for the fact we have the unusual circumstance here that it's not fungible because for instance, in the COPS program, if they had more funds were available because the bribe wasn't paid, they still couldn't have hired any new police officers, and they couldn't have received any monies from the federal government from the COPS program.
Hiring policemen, it would seem to be a normal function of a police department.
It is, Your Honor.
I mean, if the feds didn't give them the money, they would have had to use their own if they wanted to hire the same people.
Well, except for the fact that this program was put in to add 100,000 new police officers. So the basis of the police officers was added to. So no monies from the federal government came to pay the old police officers. So there is no impact upon these federal funds or upon the program. Even if they had this bribe money or the fraud money, this, let's say $75,000, they couldn't have hired more police officers, and they couldn't have hired and got any more funds from the federal government, because the
they could have hired the policemen, though, couldn't they?
They could have hired policemen, but they could have hired extra policemen, Your Honor, without the funds. Yes, they could have.
Well, I mean, if the funds were not were not misappropriated, they could presumably use them for some purpose, a police purpose in general, which might include hiring a policeman, I would think.
But they could not hire any more policemen under the COPS program. That's the only thing we have in this case. That's the only a proof of any kind of a program or federal funds that were involved in this case. Grossi involved unearmarked funds, so we don't know what they were used for. So you could say we could take from those funds and pay for other expenses other than the general assistance program. That's not the case here. Also, Your Honor, you should remember that the application here for the Department of Justice for the COPS program was filed and approved some 3 months before the conduct in this case. So the conduct in this case, taking the bribe, didn't at all affect Cicero getting these monies. So there's another indication that this is not constitutional as applied, because it didn't impact in any way. Also, Your Honor, we have the fact that the Department of Justice here is our best proof, because under the COPS program, they monitor and protect every penny of the federal funds, because what Cicero had to do was they pay the salaries first. Then they keep accounting of every penny that was expended. They would make an application to the Department of Justice. They would go over the accounting and say, yes, this was done. These people were hired, and therefore we'll give you the first year 75% of the amount you expended on the new police officers. Therefore, there's no question here that the Department of Justice was doing what we hope prosecutions in 666 were for. That is, they were themselves protecting the monies that were expended on this for these new police officers. And this monies couldn't be spent for anything else by Cicero. And it didn't impact Cicero at all, because, as I said, they couldn't have gotten any more police officers or any more federal funding. They were limited on what they could get on their share of the 100,000 police officers, new police officers, through the country. And in answer to, because I for a moment misunderstood Your Honor's first question, why doesn't Salinas foreclose the question of facial constitutionality? The question of facial constitutionality was never raised in Salinas. That was a case that was strictly...
No, but I think the you can't say it's facially unconstitutional if it's constitutional in any application. And Salinas said it was constitutional in a specific application.
So well, as I won't get into it in depth, Your Honor, but I said that in my briefs. I've showed that even Justice Scalia has said that just because there's one circumstance, and Lopez and Morrison said the same thing, just because there could be one circumstance that the defendant's conduct could affect interstate commerce, that doesn't constitutionalize the statute. And that's what's important, Your Honor,
Scalia. It may not constitutionalize all its other applications, but facially it seems to knock out the facial argument.
Well, that's going to be decided by the Supreme Court, Your Honor, and maybe Your Honors, but it's certainly going to be cited by the Supreme Court. But and then I want to get
into the Supreme Court is going to. Excuse me.
How many convictions nationwide have there been under 666?
Very few.
Lopez and Morrison, those were both new statutes.
Yes, they were, and they were based on the commerce power judgment. This is the first case that really has challenged the constitutionality of 666 prosecution.
That's my question, is how many nationwide prosecution convictions have there been under this statute over the years?
I don't know, Your Honor, but, for instance, as Judge Cudahy said, if we want to protect the funds, right, in big programs like Medicare, etc., there's never a case of Medicare fraud that doesn't involve the mail. We can always prosecute, for instance, Grossi, he was convicted on mail fraud, too. They didn't need 666. So that's why 666, as Your Honor points out, is a unique statute. And Justice Scalia and Thomas, in their dissent in Fisher, decry the great reach of this statute. And so this is a unique statute and a unique circumstance, Your Honor. It's not needed. Also, the government has in its arsenal Section 201 for bribery. But the public officials there in 201 have to have something to do with the operation and administration of the fund. They didn't have that here. That's why they had the last resort, and they went to 666, and that's the only statute involved in this case. And just quickly on Salinas, Your Honor, it was implicitly recognized in Salinas that another way that a defendant's conduct can impact on a federal interest is if it threatens the integrity and proper operation of a federal program. So if the defendants here bribe Shulo, this is, I think, brings it to a head. If they bribe Shulo to get their own candidate of their choice appointed as a new police officer under the federal COPS program, we would have conduct similar to the conduct in Salinas, where the warden of a local detention center funded by the federal government facility took a bribe from a federal prisoner in his custody to return in return for conjugal visits. We don't have that here. They didn't do anything in connection with the COPS program. The defendant's conduct did not impact on a federal interest, and the prosecution was unconstitutional as applied.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
May it please the court. In view of Mr. Smith's selection not to argue the facial constitutionality, I guess we, the United States, could also stand on its brief on that issue as well.
The fraudulent scheme in this case involved a investigation of the residency of sewage workers in Cicero instead of police officers, would there be federal jurisdiction here?
I believe there would, Your Honor. And the statute, this particular statute, 66.
And you have a better case because it's police officers.
Correct. I believe so. Our facts are much better than that. There is more akin, I think, to the direct facts in Salinas than they are to that hypothetical, Your Honor.
Why would you have jurisdiction if it was totally unrelated to this COPS program?
The purpose of the statute and the reason that it was passed in the first instance was to fill the gaps that were created in the prior federal bribery and theft statutes. The purpose, and I believe at that time Congress made the determination that trying to directly trace funds as they had previously under those statutes, that the focus would change. Rather than tracing those specific funds, the focus would be on, in essence, policing the agencies, the government that administered the funds. And the purpose of that, of course, of federal interest is to make sure that those funds that the federal government is expending and providing those localities are, in fact, spent in the fashion that they intended to be.
So then there's federal jurisdiction, broad federal jurisdiction, if the federal government is giving $100 to a town to fund a targeted, narrow program. Anything else that the town does, or people involved, officials of the town, agents of the town do, will bring them within the power of the federal government.
Well, I think under the terms of the statute, there are limitations on the statute. I mean, there are the requirements of the $10,000 in federal money. This has to be accepted. The bribe or theft itself has to exceed $5,000. So I think we're looking at more substantial thefts and briberies than $100 or a $20 payment for
cops. Yeah, but the principle is the same. You're saying if the federal government gives money to the state, to a local unit of government, then the federal government has authority to police how that local unit of government, its officials, agencies, agents are conducting their business.
Well, within the context of the statute and applying those limitations that are on the statute, I guess the answer would be yes. That's not the case here. We're much, obviously, our facts are much more direct than as far as
what is the language of the statute as to the federal aid? Does it have to be to the agency involved, or?
I think you look at what the charges are, but it's to the organization.
Organization.
Correct. Or the organization in a private sense, or to the governmental unit or agency.
Wouldn't cover the sewage aid that Judge Evans was referring to, whether that's a different agency or a different organization.
Well, I believe here that what we're looking at with respect to this particular indictment is the town of Cicero. So in your example, if they're in a hypothetical, if the funds, the federal funds, are going to the town of Cicero, we'd look at the connection between the bribe and the agency involved.
The town of Cicero, rather than the specific police department, that the funds have to be directed to. Is that?
That's what is charged in this case, Your Honor. And again, I believe in those kinds of circumstances. There have been a number of cases decided, in answer to your previous question, there have been cases in almost all circuits in this country that have dealt with 666. In a variety of ways, that at least three have upheld the facial constitutionality. All have found facts that are permitted prosecutions and convictions, including two in the Supreme Court, in Salinas and Fisher.
Incidentally, Asabri, I think Mr. Smith said that was a facial challenge. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And my understanding is that the briefs in that case are completed, the government's having been filed, I believe, on the 13th of this month. And I would commend the court to the government's brief and the respondent's brief, and I believe there's a couple of amicus as well. And that my understanding is that it's to be argued March 3rd, I believe. But I believe in the context with looking at the purpose of this statute and what it was to accomplish, which was to police the integrity of the local organization or entity receiving the funds and guaranteeing that the money was spent as planned, particularly with the facts in our case and with Cicero, I believe that one could argue that the town of Cicero is the poster child of the statute. I mean, from a factual point of view, we have Mr. Shulo, who is one of the defendants in this case, was the chief of police. With respect to the COPS program itself, Mr. Shulo signs the application along with Betty Warren Maltese, the president of Cicero at that time. They applied for the COPS funds. Mr. Shulo was, as chief of police, was responsible for certifying to the federal government that the funds had in fact been dispensed as under the program, under the terms of the program, to hire new police officers.
All of that shows what the connection is. But I was curious about your view of whether there has to be a connection. If this was the superintendent of garbage in Cicero and he was involved in a bribe, a kickback scheme with somebody, whether there'd be federal jurisdiction there.
Well, I think in those, the further you get on the continuum of the facts in this, and certain sorts of appeals have struggled with that kind of issue that you're raising. I believe, again, our facts, I believe, are strong. Where that would come into effect, that connection, if one is required, as the court in Salinas said, would come into effect in looking at whether the statute itself has been applied or as applied as constitutional. And in Salinas, they looked at those facts and decided that under that specific set of facts, it had been constitutionally applied. And even said under, regardless of what other connections might be required. But I believe that connection part goes not to an element of the offense, but as to consideration of whether the statute in a certain instance may have gone too far in lacking that kind of connection that might have to be shown. But again, I think in our facts, Mr. Shulo was involved in not only in the COPS program, but was also involved in the bribery in this case. Taking kickbacks and permitting make-work contract and costing the town of Cicero approximately $75,000. And with respect to the program, I believe that the money would come in, and the COPS money is fungible. It went into, as the court correctly noted, went into the general operating account of Cicero when it came back in. Part of our exhibits that are attached to the brief, checks were negotiated, filed, and deposited into that account. The checks that were the subject of our particular prosecution that went as payments for this make-work contract all came out of that same account, and all those checks being signed by the chief of police, Shulo. And from a factual point of view, going around the normal process that was required of submitting checks to the Board of Trustees for payment. In this instance, Mr. Shulo had used manual checks that were issued on his orders that did not require them to go to the trustees. The Board of Trustees never knew about this. We would submit on purpose.
And your position is that not, I guess, that the federal funds specifically were used for this purpose, but because they received the federal funds, it facilitated your freed up, or may have freed up at least, other funds which were in the same bank account for this purpose.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's your, yes. Your purpose, your theory of fungibility, I guess.
I believe as this court stated in Grossi, and I believe
let
that.
Let me ask you a question about on the. I know that we're not considering the facial matter today, but I just wanted a clarification. Your argument on facial unconstitutionality relies on the proposition that the Supreme Court has in Salinas decided that there was a constitutional application, therefore the statute can't be facially unconstitutional. Is that
correct?
Well, how can the Supreme Court then be considering facial constitutionality in this Sabri case? Does that contradict that proposition, or what?
I do not know, Your Honor. We still believe. and I believe that the solicitor and the argument to the Supreme Court is that it's facially constitutional. Three other courts of appeals have found it so. What the Supreme Court may have in mind, I do not know, Your Honor.
It's a rule, but they can violate it, I guess.
There are, I suppose, other reasons that they may have taken other than that. But that seems to be the issue on whether there needs to be a specific nexus beyond the jurisdictional elements required in the statute. With respect to, factually, I guess I'll go back to that. We have Mr. Shulo that's in a position to affect the federal funds. We have Mr. Shulo drawing against, with respect to the offense in this particular indictment prosecution, drawing against funds in the same account. I believe that those facts are at least as strong as the facts in Salinas as far as the connection, again, if one is required, which suggests in an as-applied analysis, they may well be. The defendant's argument that there is no connection, that those funds, the COPS funds, were not fungible, suggest are invalid. Government would admit that this statute is constitutional on its face, and certainly as applied to the defendants in this particular case, based on the facts and the nature of the funds that were expended and coming from the same account, which I believe Your Honor is correct, would free up money for other reasons. Either, for additional bribes, additional expenditures. The $75,000, one could argue, that was expended on the Make Work contract could have been used to employ another police officer and seeking then reimbursement from the COPS program for doing that. The defendants also in their brief raised additional issues about concerning the whether the court abused its discretion in precluding the testimony of the grant master, whose testimony was only to provide evidence of the nature of the COPS program and what the funds were intended to be used for, which, again, we said that had no relevancy at all to the proof of the elements of this 666 that the government had to prove. Likewise, challenged whether the judge abused its discretion in denying the defendant's request for a jury instruction that included as an element that the government must show, or must have presented evidence for the jury, of the direct and substantial impact on a federal interest, which again is not required in this circuit. The judge, in fact, gave the Seventh Circuit pattern instructions tendered by the government and did not abuse his discretion in doing so. And likewise with the arguments with respect to whether the convictions on the mail money laundering statute and the client conspiracy are valid. We suggest that since the money laundering convictions were based on the validity of the 666 convictions, we assert that 666 convictions were valid, therefore the money laundering likewise was valid. And the client conspiracy, the government argued, would stand on its own. The source of the money in a client conspiracy is irrelevant. I believe that's it. There's no further questions. I believe that's it.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Judge Cuddy, in answer to your question about Sabree, here's the exact question posed before Sabree. It's not just facial constitutionality. Does 18 U.S.C. 666 criminalize acts of bribery lacking a nexus to a federal interest? If so, is the statute in that respect a constitutional exercise of Congress's limited powers? So they're saying if there is no nexus, do they have the power to do it under the spending clause? So that's what's going to be decided. So it's more than just the facial constitutionality, and this question was never decided in Salinas.
How different would the penalty be here if only the, under the guidelines, if only the Klein conspiracy counts?
It's about a year and a half, Your Honor. But let me say, because you brought that up, Your Honor, that's a case, as far as my client is concerned, Your Honor, I would think even less as far as Inandino, as far as Spano is concerned. I think so, Your Honor. But on that, no reasonable juror, absent those allegations that they're bribers and thieves, which was all mixed up in the Klein conspiracy and attached by reference, there would no reasonable juror could find Inandino or Spano guilty. Inandino asked for
they could have found them bribers and thieves without regard to the federal jurisdictional issues here, and found that they received money.
But if those counts weren't in the indictment, that's what I'm really saying. And therefore, if those allegations weren't part of the Klein conspiracy, because Inandino asked for a 1099 and he gave the informant his 36 ID number, he paid $75,000 in miscellaneous income, and the IRS agent said it could be within that $75,000, the $3,100 that he got from Cicero. And lastly, both Inandino and Spano said, let's all chip in and pay the remaining $8,000 on the taxes that was due so that we can all sleep nights. I would like a chance at a jury without the allegations of bribery and thievery. And that's it, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.